This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.
Welcome to True Crime Garage. Wherever you are, whatever you are doing, thanks for listening. I'm your host, Nick, and with me as always is a man that's not a genius, he's not a physicist, but he's a misanthrope. He is the captain.
The captain of the misanthropes. It's good to be seen, and it's good to see you. Thanks for listening, and thanks for telling a friend.
Beer of the week today, we are drinking Triple by New Belgium Brewing Company. Garage grade 4 3/4 bottle caps out of 5. This beer is almost certainly the first triple consumed by many craft beer drinkers back in the 90s and 2000s, and that alone probably makes it one of the most important American triples ever made. Now, I know people were a little upset back in 2015 when New Belgium announced that they are updating the recipe. I did the taste test, and take it from me, the newer version is superior. And this superior recipe was brought to us by these superior beings. First up, we have Matt P. in Deer Park, Texas.
And our thoughts are with everybody in Texas. Stay strong, my friends. And a big shout out to Danica in Roseville, California.
Next, we go up north and say hello and thank you to Christopher in Ottawa, Ontario, Canada.
And a big shout out to Michelle from the ATL, Atlanta, Georgia.
And a big thank you to Michael in Fairbanks, Arkansas. Michael says he's buying a round of beers and tacos for the garage. So if you'd like to buy us a round of tacos and beer for next week's show, go to truecrimegarage.com and click on the donate button.
Yeah, Taco Tuesday became True Crime Garage Tuesday.
All right, Captain, pass me the tacos. Everybody gather around, grab a chair, grab a beer. Let's talk some true crime. Seventeen-year-old Candace Hiltz was found dead August 15, 2006. She was shot 7 times total, 6 in the head and 1 in the chest. 3 guns might have been used to kill Candace Hiltz: a shotgun, a small caliber gun, and a bullet from a medium caliber gun. The paths of the bullets are steeply downward, back to front and left to right. The autopsy does not present evidence that the guns were fired at close range or the order she was shot. Candace was shot in the head once with a shotgun and then 5 times in the back with a gun of a small caliber. She was also shot once in the chest from the front with a gun of a medium caliber. Someone had broken into the home of Candace Hiltz and murdered her that afternoon. With the gun evidence, Was it one person using three guns? Or two killers? Or possibly more? This is just the first of many strange twists in the murder of 17-year-old Candace Hiltz. And this is True Crime Garage. Candace Hiltz was born on December 22, 1988, in Cannon City, Colorado. Candace was born into a large family. She was the only girl and the youngest child. She had nine older brothers. Unfortunately, Candace was only 5 years old when her father passed away. At a very early age, it was obvious that Candace was extremely intelligent. Dolores Hiltz is Candace's mother, and she describes her daughter as, "Candy was a gift," and noted that Candace was doing calculus at the age of 11. Candace's sister-in-law, this is Heather Hiltz, said the two were close growing up and grew even closer when she married into the family, and saying Candace was outspoken, smart, funny, and would readily tell you what she thought even if you didn't like what she was saying.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like somebody I know.
Yeah, sounds like somebody I'm sitting next to.
Sitting next to yourself.
She grew up to be a strong young lady who could give her nine older brothers a dressing down if she thought they needed it. Now, we mentioned that Candace was very smart. This is how smart she was. When most kids her age were in high school, she was enrolled at Brigham Young University. When Candace was 16, she was halfway done with college, but then she got pregnant and then gave birth to a baby girl and named her Paige. This is in September of 2005. Paige was born with an illness. This is a hydrocephalus, which is basically fluids or buildup of fluids on the brain or in the brain. This meant that Paige would not likely live a very long life. Candace questioned her mother about how she could afford to continue to go to college and also care for her ill daughter. Dolores and Candace decided that they would figure out something, and Candace's mom never told her that she should drop out of school and just get a job and tend to the baby. No, Dolores told her daughter that college was, you know, her daughter's dream and that they would figure something out. So by the age of 17, Candace was a mom and still a college student, but now taking classes online through BYU. She was looking to fulfill another goal after BYU. She had just received an acceptance letter to Stanford Law School. So by the age of 18, she was going to graduate from BYU and then go on to Stanford Law School. Her dream was to be a Supreme Court justice.
On August 10th, 2006, the sheriff's department is going to show up at the Hiltz home, and they have questions because they're looking for Candace's brother.
Yeah, and this is Officer Robert Dodd from the local sheriff's department. He's at the Hiltz home. Now, we have to set this up a bit before we get into this stuff. So the Hiltz home is located in Fremont County in Colorado, which is policed by the Fremont County Sheriff's Department. Candace and her daughter Paige lived at Dolores Hiltz home. Remember, this is Candace's mother. I've read several newspaper accounts of this, and I'm still a bit fuzzy on who was all living at the home for reasons that will become clearer as we go. But according to the newspaper accounts, they are quoting Candace's mother, Dolores. Candace and Paige lived at her home along with a couple of her older brothers. Of those older brothers is James Hiltz, who is a very big part of our story. James suffered from some pretty severe mental illness. His mother describes this as he is very delusional and fearful of interaction with other people. And this fear or phobia of other people extended to his own family. James's mother says that at this time in August of 2006, James was living in a tent in the woods behind the Hiltz home. Now, this is a very rural area. So to be a little bit more clear, James was living deep in the woods behind their house.
So maybe something a little bit deeper than just anxiety. Maybe some sort of schizophrenia.
Possibly. That's what I would believe. And the reports I read, it sounds like they would often not see James for days. Dolores said James would rarely interact with anyone in the Hiltz family. He didn't have any close friends because he had this fear of interacting or being around other people. Dolores said James believed that some other woman was his actual mother, and this, of course, only distanced him further from the family. It sounds like this was a pretty long-term condition that they had been dealing with for a long time, because it's often reported that Candace stood up for her older brother, because unfortunately, a lot of times people can be mean. So anyway, back to the sheriff's department. Mm-hmm. Officer Robert Dodd was sent to the Hilts home. He was there to question James. The reports are for trespassing and stealing some items. James entered somebody's home and took some of their property. Well, of course, James is not there for Officer Dodd to question him because he's living in the woods. So Officer Dodd talks to Dolores and Candace. FYI, I should throw this out there. We would only end up with one version of this story. This would later come from Dolores. For some reason, Candace becomes upset with the officer. There could be a multitude of reasons for her becoming upset with him. Maybe she didn't like the questions. Maybe it was possible things that were said about her brother that she didn't like.
Yeah, and while she's also pretty young, and even though she's doing these more adult activities like going to college and stuff, doesn't mean that she is mature for her age.
Mm-hmm. Or what I think is probably most likely, Captain, if this story is in fact true, it's probably the way the officer was treating Candace's mother, Dolores. That's my guess.
Yeah.
You know, the officer, when told why Dolores could not produce her son James for questioning, you know, I can't tell you where James is, except he's living in a tent somewhere in the woods, you know, probably sounds strange and weird to the officer, almost like she's hiding
right,
her
or
son.
She's lying.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, Candace gets loud with the officer. There's now a loud argument going on between Candace and Officer Dodd.
Well, and sometimes you become pretty protective of individuals that are very protective of you.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be.
Apparently, at some point, Dodd threatens to arrest Candace. And she.
For what?
Well, you know how these things probably go down. When an officer is not getting the answers that they want, I can just kind of picture this thing working out in my head, right? He shows up, he's looking for James, he questions the mother, I can't tell you where he is except for he's living in the woods, sounds like a made-up story. The officer gets upset with the mother, probably threatens her with some kind of obstruction of justice situation. Right. Then we have Candace stepping in to defend the mother. And I'm guessing he probably threw that obstruction of justice idea out to Candace. Well, apparently Candace kind of threatened him back because she's basically telling him, go ahead and arrest me.
This is a tactic that they get with their handbooks, right?
I hope not.
No, they do. The handbook is called Cops with Small Dicks Handbook. And when they feel threatened by, you know, a 16, 17-year-old female, they have to pull out these. You're obstructing justice. I'm going to arrest you.
Yeah, I mean, I usually have the police backs, but this situation sounds to me like a bully tactic. I've run out of my brain is small, so I've run out of ideas. Now I'm just going to throw this, I'm going to arrest you idea out there.
Yeah, no. I love cops. I love anybody that is willing to sign up to protect and serve. But again, those two words are not happening here. Who's he protecting?
Mm-hmm.
He's not protecting Candace or the mother, and he's not serving the public by threatening people that he's questioning.
Well, here's an idea. If you really want to find James, okay, yes, he's a thought to have broken into some homes and stolen some pretty small items that are not extremely valuable. If you really want to catch James, isn't your best bet befriending the mother and family members of this guy who's potentially living in the woods rather than going in there and disrupting the whole situation and upsetting everybody?
Well, and I also think, you know, you have to show respect to get respect.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think a lot of these times, you know, I think a lot of times people of authority will come in, not just cops, but they'll come in with the attitude that I deserve respect. It's like, well, look, show them some respect. Show them that you actually care. Look, this isn't so much about your son breaking into somebody's home, because that's bad. Mm-hmm. But these little items that they stole, we can replace those.
Mm-hmm.
But what's going to happen when your son that has some mental illness breaks into a home with a gun owner, and then the gun owner protects their property and protects himself, and rightfully so, and then your son ends up dead because of this.
Mm-hmm.
And if you approach it in that manner, then you're going to get some answers.
Right. And maybe we need to just keep it as, we'd like to talk to your son. We don't know if he's guilty of anything at all.
But again, that goes back to serve and protect, because then you're trying to explain to him, hey, we're trying to serve the community, but we're also trying to protect your son in the process.
Here's the thing. When Dodd gets threatened back by Candace, she basically tells him to go ahead and arrest her because, according to Dolores, Candace says that she tells Dodd that she had seen him on several occasions accepting envelopes from known drug dealers, and she would gladly tell others at the sheriff's office what she had witnessed once he brings her in on this arrest.
Very interesting play.
Yeah, Candace should have been a poker player. Dodd.
She was interested in law, so there's possibility too that, you know, she saw in law enforcement and she's like, "Brain it, I've been studying this my whole life."
Mm-hmm. Officer Dodd eventually leaves the Hilts home that evening. He never ends up speaking to James, and he arrests no one that night.
Mm-hmm.
Now, within a few days of this incident with Officer Dodd, the Hilts family dog goes missing. Of course, as we said, this is a rural area, and that means, you know, there's about a 50-50 shot that this dog was an outside dog, you know, lived outside.
Right.
I have several friends that live out in the country with outdoor dogs, and, well, sometimes outside dogs take off on a little adventure for a day or so. And I know my friends don't really become alarmed until the dog is gone for like 3 or more days.
Okay.
It's hard to say if this set off any alarms or any red flags with the family. Okay, we had to take a little bit of a break there, Captain. Apparently they're chopping down forest around the garage. So if you hear some noise in the background, that is not me feeding the captain into a wood chipper. That's just some people taking care of it. Say something so the people know that you're still here.
I'm here.
All right, he's here.
I'm one limb short, but no, they're chopping down a tree or something, and they're going to toss it into the grinder, but we don't have time to waste.
That's right. So now, of course, Captain, there are cases that we have a he said, she said situation. This mm-hmm. case, well, this case is a he said, she said, they said, she said, and oh yeah, nobody's talking about this. Mm-hmm. So with all of that, it makes it extremely tough to piece together this story, but we're going to sift through this thing together, my friends, throw it all into the mix, stir up the pot, and see what we're left with. So with that in mind, we continue. And I want to throw out here that some reports state that the family was alarmed and concerned about the missing family dog, while other reports simply state that the family believed it's the country, we've lived in the country for a long time, this was not a concern. Okay, so let's recap real quick. On August 10th, while the sheriff's department was looking for James Hilts, Officer Dodd gets into an argument with Candace at her mother's home in front of her mother. Then a couple days later, the Hilts notice that their dog is missing. There is one newspaper report stating that Candace went to the sheriff's department. It is believed this would be to file some sort of complaint. The report does not state where this information came from, if a report was actually filed, or by whom they got this information. So we cannot verify that. And then there is August 15th. This is just 5 days after the argument with Officer Dodd. Dolores is out running an errand, and at home are her daughter Candace and granddaughter baby Paige. Dolores says that she left the home around noon. She returned to the home a little after 3:30 p.m. that same day. When she arrived, she does not see Candace. Instead, she sees an obvious sign of a struggle. She hears her granddaughter crying, and she makes her way through the house. Dolores notices blood. She gets to her granddaughter's room, and Paige is in her crib crying. There is a bed in this room, and the bed appears to have been propped up. There is something underneath of it. Dolores investigates. It's a large comforter stuffed under the bed. And she pulls and tugs on the comforter, pulling it from out under the bed. As she pulls on it, it starts to unravel. Inside the comforter, she discovers the lifeless body of her 17-year-old daughter. Dolores knows that it is Candace, but due to the injury she sustained in her death, Candace is unrecognizable. Her face and head are a bloody mess. At some point, the authorities are called. The Fremont County Sheriff's authorities responded more than 1 hour later.
It took them a whole hour?
Well, what's confusing here is what time was the call placed.
Okay.
Because Dolores says that when she found her daughter, that she, you know, she was stricken by grief, you know, shocked at the discovery. Mm-hmm. And she basically fell to the floor and laid there holding Candace's hand for some time. I'm unclear as to who called 911 and at what time that call was placed. But mm-hmm. the reports that we can see state that sometime about an hour to a little more than an hour after Dolores returned home is when the sheriff's department arrived. On the scene, we have deputies Briscoe and Dodd. The Fremont County coroner, this is Dr. Dorothy Twillman, followed shortly behind. This was an obvious homicide from the get-go. The first report to come out in the newspapers had little real information and was wrong. It simply stated a girl's body was found dumped in a remote area of the county. Even though there's a lot of reasons to speculate and question a lot of things in this case, I don't find this as anything of importance. Mm-hmm. More than likely what happened is the sheriff's department offered little in the way of information and the paper just ran with the story.
Right. They just went with speculation instead of facts.
Yeah. The reporter was probably just told that they had found an unidentified girl who had been murdered. The next reports were accurate with no real detail, simply stating Candace Hiltz, 17, died of multiple gunshot wounds on August 15, 2006 in the family home in Copper Gulch area, 25 miles southwest of Cannon City.
Well, you're telling me earlier too that a lot of reports reported Candace as 16.
Yeah.
Like they couldn't even get the age right.
Yeah, there's several reports that say she's 16 and some saying she's 17.
Mm-hmm.
Years later, Candace Hilt's mother, Dolores Hiltz, discussed with the Daily Record about her daughter's murder, describing how she was the one who had found her daughter and that it was something she will never forget, stating that she had found her wrapped in a blanket underneath of the bed.
Mm-hmm.
It was after Candace Hiltz was found that authorities began searching the area. And they found the family dog. Unfortunately, the authorities found the dog tied up to a tree in a place that, quote, you wouldn't have seen him. The dog was tied to a tree and killed with possibly an axe or some kind of hatchet. Now, detectives are working on a new theory after having found the family dog tied up to this tree in the woods behind the house. That someone had either targeted the Hiltz house for a possible burglary or targeted Candace for murder. The killer or killers who had done this took the dog and killed it a day or a couple of days before forcing their way into the home and killing Candace.
Premeditated, okay.
Yeah, they also, yeah, premeditated break-in or premeditated murder. They had also found that someone had forced their way into the home using a crowbar or pry bar on a door, forcing it open to gain entry into the residence. At some point, Detective Bruce Briscoe told Dolores that authorities believed her son, James Hiltz, was a person of interest in the case, and they mounted a search to find him. I have a newspaper report saying that he was 28, and again, some saying he's 29. Not a big deal, but it seems to be a common, common occurrence in this case.
Yeah, errors.
But anyway, he's in his late 20s and at this time, and he's over 10 years older than Candace at the time of her murder. The family is ordered out of the home. This whole place is a crime scene. Dolores is brought to the sheriff's department for questioning. During a four-hour interview, Dolores Hiltz said she was repeatedly asked who her son was hanging out with. She answered, of course, no one. He won't even talk to his brothers. It was then discovered by the authorities that James was suffering from a psychotic episode or psychotic episodes, and okay. He had been released early from a mental health facility and was living off the land. Now, apparently, he was getting, like, you know how mothers are. Even when Well, you have a mother, and yeah, remember, you are a guy that claims to know a lot of mothers.
No,
so
we're going
to
bring that up again.
Yeah, so you are an expert. I don't need to tell you this. But you know how mothers are the best, and here's why.
Mother!
Most of the time, no matter what you do, yeah, maybe there might be some distance between the two of you, but they'll still try to help you out any way that they can. And here's a good example of that.
I don't think you've met my mother.
Apparently... James was getting food and water from a camper outside of the Hilts home that his mother was stocking. She was keeping it stocked with food and water for him.
Okay.
So he would go and retrieve these items, take it back to...
The best part of spring cleaning takeaway is the post-clean clarity you get. It's kind of like when you find out that you've been paying a fortune for wireless. When Mint Mobile has phone plans for $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan. It's time to switch to Mint Mobile. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all of your existing contacts. Ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited-time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. Save a lot of money with Mint Mobile. Get their great mobile wireless service delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. That's premium service at a great price. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/TCG. That's mintmobile.com/TCG. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/TCG. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Everyone loves a good family mystery, especially one with as many twists and turns as June's Journey, a hidden object mystery game with a captivating detective story. It takes you back to the glamour of the 1920s, with a diverse cast of characters. You'll step into the role of June Parker and search for hidden clues to uncover the mystery of her sister's murder. Use your observation skills to quickly uncover key pieces of information that lead to chapters of mystery, danger, and romance. And customize your very own luxurious estate island. Think expansive gardens and beautiful buildings. Collect scraps of information to fill your photo album and learn more about each character. And you can chat and play with or against other players by joining a detective club. Can you crack the case? Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.
Wherever he was camping in the woods, and she wouldn't have to worry about him starving to death out there.
Right, and then she'd also know if he took the food.
Yeah, so that he still, that's smart. I didn't even think about that. She told detectives that James didn't come to the house, wouldn't come to the house, wouldn't talk to anybody in the family, also telling them that he's delusional, and he thinks that Dolores is not his mother, and some other woman has replaced her.
So with any mental break, one could assume that almost anything is possible. Mm-hmm. But what doesn't add up here is, okay, one, how is he getting this crowbar to break into the house? And wouldn't he know a better way to get into the house? And then also, where is he coming up with these three guns? Mm-hmm. Do we have any evidence that he has three guns? There's a lot of questions here, and we can get back into this right after this quick beer break.
We'll be right back.
All right, we're back, and I think they stopped cutting that tree down.
All right, so we are hunting for James Hiltz. The Fremont County Sheriff's Office announced that they were searching for James Hiltz, stating deputies and additional law enforcement search teams were searching for James, calling him a person of interest in the death of Candace Hiltz. Deputies and other law enforcement searchers were looking for James Hiltz in the area of Deer Mountain and Copper Gulch. They described him as 5'10" tall, 155 pounds, with blonde hair and blue eyes. He was believed to be in possession of at least two firearms. He was, of course, considered to be armed and dangerous. They had not filed any murder charges against James at this time, however, and a couple of officers off the record stated that they did believe that James had murdered his sister. Well, they found him on Friday, just a couple days later, and the...
Well, back up a little bit, because, I mean, you know, again, what was their proof that he had guns?
Well, if they're calling him a person of interest in this murder, she was obviously killed by way of gun.
So they're assuming he has guns.
Correct.
But I think, you know, what I'm getting at is that law enforcement obviously has the responsibility of protecting the public, mm-hmm. but also by saying that this individual that has guns, that we have no evidence he has guns and he's mentally ill, you might be setting him up for a situation where somebody runs into him and they don't catch him alive, is what I'm saying. And then if they don't catch him alive, well, then we can just pin this on him and move about our day.
Well, yeah, and you're right. They most certainly have that obligation. We have this situation here where they're looking for the older brother of a murder victim, somebody that they were already looking for on unrelated charges days before her murder.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have a situation where if you think he is a suspect, and they never call him, to my knowledge, they never call him a suspect, just a person of interest. If you have a person of interest who you believe may have committed this crime, but at the same time, you also believe that they have committed, you know, unrelated break-ins. Wow. You have to find this guy very quickly, because if this is something he's escalated to, right. We have a whole bunch of people that are in a considerable amount of danger now.
Well, and I don't mean to throw law enforcement under the bus here, because they might have more knowledge of his priors, because I don't have any knowledge of his priors other than these, you know, accusations of him breaking and entering people's houses, but no accusations or no charges on violence.
You're exactly right. He had several run-ins with the law. All of them were non-violent offenses. All of them were pretty petty crimes.
Mm-hmm.
But
I'm just saying that law enforcement in a small town also might know of, you know, oh, he got in a fist fight here or there. They might know about some things that we aren't aware of.
His family, when they were looking for him, they were saying, you know, from the get-go, we don't believe he did this for several reasons, but one of those being he had no previous history of violence, even toward the family. You know, sometimes things happen within a family and it's not always reported to the authorities, but they're saying he was not a violent man. But the problem is, at the same time, when you're telling me that your son is not a violent man, you're also telling me that he might not even know who he is anymore.
Right.
If what you're telling me is the truth, and Dolores and family, you believe that to be the truth, he doesn't believe you are his mother. This guy is not what I would call delusional. This is what I would call he's had some kind of break with reality. He might be in his own.
Isn't that what a delusion is?
Yes. Yeah, probably is. But I mean, I don't think delusional is a big enough word for what I think this kid is experiencing. I think he's had a break with reality. I don't think he fully knows what's going on or who the people around him may be. This could present a problem, because if you have a person who has become afraid for reasons we might not be able to comprehend, he could become a dangerous person. And now if he's capable of breaking into other homes, like I said, we have a huge problem on our hand. Thankfully he is located, and they found him on that Friday in the rugged Copper Gulch Iron Mountain area. This is southwest of Cannon City, just 3 days after the sheriff's deputies found Candace Hiltz dead at her mother's home. Now, after his arrest, I want everybody to let's listen carefully to the charges.
Okay, if you weren't listening before, start listening now.
That's right.
Everybody, listen carefully.
Okay, James Hiltz has been charged with first and second degree burglary mm-hmm. and criminal trespassing. Note, all of these are considered felonies. He is also being charged with theft and criminal mischief. Authorities say that he broke into a home and stole hatchets and flashlights. Sheriff Jeff Beaker said searches have been conducted at the Hiltz home and people are being interviewed in connection of the homicide. James Hiltz was scheduled to appear in the Fremont County Court on August 31st. He remained at the Fremont County Jail on $500,000 bond until that time.
Oh, okay. Let me just wrap my head around all this mess, right? Mm-hmm. So he's charged with all these felonies, mm-hmm. right? And what did he steal? Flashlights and hatchets.
Yes, that's what's reported.
And we could assume that he's stealing these items for survival.
Correct.
Flashlights, hatchets. And we know that he's mentally ill, and we place a bond on him for $500,000.
Half a mil.
On a mentally ill person. And I understand that maybe he's a person of interest in a murder, mm-hmm. but this is no justice at all. This is a mentally ill individual. And you're charging him with these crimes where he was not attacking anybody. He was not violent towards anybody. Mm-hmm. And he was stealing stuff, trying to survive while he's going through this delusional state or possible mental break, like you called it. Mm-hmm. Where's the justice there?
Well, Captain, I'm afraid I'm going to have to disagree with you. If you're saying what I think you're saying, I sympathize with what you're saying, and I sympathize with his condition. As a citizen, you know, if I were living in the area or if he were in my area and this went down, here's the way I got to look at it. He's arrested. He's picked up on a Friday. He probably didn't get any type of court hearing until the following Monday. Mm-hmm. So that bond, I'm guessing, of $500,000 is set just 6 days after the murder of his sister. Now, I understand that these are lower level crimes that he's being held on. However, I do want to remind you, some of those are considered to be felonies. And one thing that would be presented to the judge at the time is he is involved in a homicide investigation. We are talking to him about this. We're talking to his family about this, seeking information. Mm-hmm. And furthermore, he could be a flight risk. And what I mean by that is...
Well, definitely. I'm not arguing with the idea. You know, look, he set a bail. I get it. Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying is the initial charges are kind of ridiculous anyways. I understand that he committed that crime. I understand that he might possibly admit to that crime. But I think there needs to be a better system in place to, you know, you're going to take a mentally unstable individual and then put them in the system for breaking and entering so they could survive mm-hmm. in a delusional state. I mean, that's what I have more of an issue with.
And the reason why I say he's a flight risk is he's living in the woods. He's some kind of survivalist.
Right. He's been on, they caught him in flight.
Right. You know, and when they did catch him, I do want to say that they caught him. He surrendered without incident. You know, he didn't attack any of the people that were arresting him. He didn't have any guns on him at the time.
Of course he didn't.
He had some kind of knife. The newspapers reference a knife. I don't mm-hmm. know that means that he was a violent person. I think
that means you're living in the woods.
If I were living in the woods, I would do full like Davy Crockett mode, and I would have knives and the coonskin cap and everything else going on.
Okay.
Actually, you know what, Captain? I think I'm going to do.
Just like dressing up.
I'm getting a lot of phone calls to my cell phone lately that I don't want. I'm thinking about using this story here to update my voicemail greeting saying, "I'm sorry, missed your call. I'm now living in the woods."
Like Davy Crockett.
That's right. So here's the thing. I think it's reasonable, the $500,000 bond, just because this is where my head's at.
No, that's fine. But what I'm saying is, you know, once the bond is done and stuff, you're possibly putting somebody into a system that they're not going to be able to get out of, not going to be able to get adequate care for mm-hmm. with their mental illness. I think we have the justice system, and I think we have to have another system in place when we're dealing with the mentally ill.
And I agree with that. But I agree with the $500,000 bond, because my opinion is, let's set this thing a little high so we can hold him for a certain amount of time until we get this straightened out. Maybe he's not our guy, but I'm with you. Maybe sitting in a jail cell or sitting in a jail amongst other people waiting for trial is not the best location for this young man to be housed while we're waiting to get to the bottom of this. So anyway, James was charged with unrelated burglary charges. He was never charged with the homicide. We have to do some fast forwarding here, but eventually James was found not guilty on the burglary charges, but this was by reason of insanity. Okay. He was eventually committed to the Colorado Mental Health Institute in 2008.
Okay, so I go on this whole rant, and they basically did the right thing.
Yeah, I think he ended up in the right place, but I'm with you. Maybe jail, especially with his affliction.
Well, they probably put him in a cell by himself.
I hope so.
Yeah, but the problem there is, you know, he wasn't under any treatment, so at least they said, look, we're going to drop these charges. We know he's mentally ill. Let's put him in a hospital and let's get him the treatment that he needs, or try to get him the treatment that he needs.
Mm-hmm. And I did mention that he had no firearms in his possession when he was arrested. Of course, it was suspected that he could have had one or two with him, presumably guns that he would have used to in his sister's murder.
I would like to know if they did the test to see if he fired a gun.
That's a good question.
Because we could assume that he's not taking showers.
Well, we have some listeners that are involved in forensics and things like that. I would love to hear and see on the blog if anybody could clear this up, because he wasn't captured until 3 days after her murder. Is this enough time? I don't know. I don't know the ins and outs of this whole situation, but I imagine it washes off at some point.
Yeah, I heard it's anywhere between like 24 and 48 hours.
Okay.
But again, I would wonder, you know, how much does it stay on the body depending on how much you wash? You know, if you fire a gun, can you wash yourself two or three times and get rid of this residue?
Mm-hmm. We'll get back to James' situation as far as whether he makes a good suspect or not, because I think there's a lot to talk about there. After the arrest of James, the remaining members of the Hiltz family was now allowed back in their home. But when Dolores Hiltz returned home, she was shocked when she did. Dolores has maintained for years that the investigators botched this investigation. Dolores Hiltz has discussed with media how the investigators did not take all the evidence with them, that bullet casings were left behind, as well as the blanket her daughter was wrapped in.
Hmm.
She said that they left evidence in there for 3 days, adding that the sheriff's office investigators didn't even tape off the house. So Captain, they didn't.
They could have had, anybody could have got in there.
They didn't secure the home. They left evidence uncollected, and they left a door wide open.
Right. But now, is there evidence of this, or is this just she said, he said stuff?
I mean, there is evidence of this,
because she's collecting the evidence and then sending it back to them.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be the evidence of it. Okay.
Yeah. So here's my thought on the door being left wide open.
Okay.
I don't think this was like, born in a barn situation, forgot to close the door. I think this was probably the door that whomever accessed to enter the home, to break into the home, it was probably busted up enough that it couldn't be just closed and locked, simply closed and locked, but they could have boarded it up in some fashion so that people couldn't enter the home while there's nobody there, while they've told the family to vacate.
Right, but in law enforcement's defense, I mean, it could have been one of those things where, oh, I pulled it shut and it seemed like it was going to stay shut.
Mm-hmm.
But then wind opened up the door. So now, it could be that case. I mean, my front door is the same way. Like, if you go outside and you shut the door behind you, if you don't lock it, it has a possibility of blowing open just from the wind.
Mm-hmm. Dolores Hiltz went to the Fremont County Sheriff's Office and asked to speak with the chief or the deputies that were on the scene. This is Dodd and Briscoe. She was told that all three of them were too busy. And she insisted on staying there until someone talked to her. She said finally a young officer came out and she told him about her concerns. Now, her concerns are she's gone home. The place was unsecured and there's evidence still there. That's what she's trying to report to them in person. And she's getting nowhere with this. She tells the young officer her concerns and nothing happens. So when no one called or no one came out to the house, well, Dolores Hiltz and her son, this is her son, Jonathan, they went to a store to buy plastic bags and bagged up bullet casings themselves to eventually take them to the officers. She said in those 3 days, the investigators that were there searching the home, they only took about 15 things in two envelopes and they took a piece of paneling and a piece of carpet. And she said, that's it. Now, Jonathan Hiltz, this is her other son, had taken forensic crime classes. So the two of them, they put on protective booties and gloves, and they methodically photographed and bagged all of the evidence that was left and placed it in a plastic container with an evidence log. Here's what they didn't take. There was a white computer speaker with blood on it that had been used to prop up the bed. This was the bed she was found underneath. The blanket that Candace was found in, where her body was found, was still at the home. There was a shotgun casing in the baby's cradle. All the evidence they found, as I said, was tagged and bagged, and it was put in a container. Mm-hmm. Later, Briscoe showed up with a search warrant and asked where the container of evidence was, and Dolores gave it to him.
Okay.
Now, Dolores has a very good quote when asked about this by the media. She said, I'm thinking seasoned cops don't leave evidence, and these are not rookie officers. That statement's very true.
Right. So, but what is she implying by that?
What she's implying is that it looks like her and her son were able to find more evidence than what the police left with.
Yeah. No, I think that, but I think maybe they left this on purpose.
Right. I'm sorry. That's exactly what I believe she's trying to tell all of us, is that she would have expected some do-good Boy Scout cop to maybe show up and not know what he's doing and overlook some of these things.
The do-good Boy Scout, always be prepared. He would have collected the evidence.
That's right. Sorry about that. I apologize.
Going to throw the whole Weeblo Scouts under the bus.
I'm a rude person.
Yeah, you
feed me into the wood chipper.
I already lost a limb. It's now your turn, my friend.
But I think you're right on. You're spot on there, Captain. She's pointing out these guys have been around the block too long. They've been on the job too long. It almost seems like they weren't willing to take this stuff with them for whatever reason. Who knows?
Right. So that kind of goes with the whole conspiracy theory about this case, though. Is that if you're looking for this individual that's breaking in and entering into houses and stealing these little, flashlights and whatnot, then this young girl kind of runs her mouth to this cop, and then the cop decides, hey, you know what? I'm going to teach this young girl a lesson, and that lesson is that we're going to murder you for whatever reason. And I think maybe it wasn't just her running her mouth, but did what Candace said to that officer, did it strike a nerve? Now, point this out. So if she said, okay, well, I know that you're taking money from drug dealers, or I've seen this, or I can prove this, and I have other eyewitnesses. And then let's say there's more than one cop involved in this, then that cop has to tell his buddy cop, and he tells another buddy cop, and then they show up and they go, okay, we're going to get rid of her. And guess what? We got an easy person to pin this on, her crazy brother.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we get to the scene, there's this evidence. We don't really want to have that all collected, because this evidence is going to start pointing, you can't hide certain facts. Just like, there was three guns used in this murder.
Mm-hmm.
So how did that happen if it was just one individual?
Right.
It becomes it doesn't make a lot of sense. So you got to connect the dots.
Mm-hmm.
And so by not collecting that evidence, it goes more towards that conspiracy theory that maybe the cops were involved.
Well, and one thing that is very telling. So you bring up an interesting topic here, because one of the big reasons why Dolores will point out, amongst other several other details, why her son James should not be a suspect,
right,
is that he had no friends. He had no people that he interacted with. He didn't run around with anybody. And like you said, this case, well, like I said earlier, this case is very strange because you have two almost completely different stories. You have the story of the sheriff's department and you have the story of the Hiltz family. The one place where they do match up is it seems to be that the sheriff's department and the Hiltz family both can agree that two or more people committed this crime, mm-hmm. committed this murder. And verification of that is the sheriff's department asking Dolores, who does your son hang out with? She's not, you know, it's not just where is your son? It's who does your son hang out with?
Right.
Because they know early in the get-go, this thing was committed by at least two people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Dolores on the other end will say that's why he's not a good suspect, because he had no friends. He didn't hang out with anybody. He was afraid. He had a phobia of being around other people, of having relationships with people. That is an interesting point where they actually match up in their beliefs.
Right. Well, part of the police.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I think that's where it gets odd there. And yeah, is it two or three people? I don't know.
It certainly doesn't look like one. And here's one of the other things that Dolores would point out when they're worried about her son, James. Remember the house was broken into. The Hiltz home was broken into. Somebody used a breaker bar, a pry bar, crowbar, whatever you want to call it, to break into this door and then gets into the home. James Hiltz, when he did come in the house, which apparently he did go back into the house on occasion, but this would only be when nobody was at the home.
Right. Supplies.
There was a butter knife that was hidden underneath the front step to the home, and he would use this butter knife to pop open the front door.
Yeah.
So he had no reason to, you know, basically bust his way into that door.
Yeah, that doesn't exclude him, though, just because, again, if he is in some manic state or some delusional state, you know, he might not even understand what he's breaking into.
Mm-hmm.
So it wouldn't be like, oh, well, I have no clue what's happening. Oh, I remember there's a butter knife here. He could be so far gone that, he thinks he's breaking into a castle or something.
And that's exactly right. Those are the questions that come into my mind. And these are reasons why I cannot exclude James as a good suspect. I think he's right up there. There's questionable things going on in this family. There's questionable things going on in this household. And I don't know that any of us have a clue what's going on with James. Here's the questions I want to talk about. Okay, we already talked about that he may not have had to have breaking into the home.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's already went into other people's homes and he's stolen some items. Now, we said that the dog appeared to have been killed with an axe or a hatchet. Well, one of the items believed that he had stolen from these other homes was, in fact, a hatchet. Mm-hmm. It's actually in one report states that he had stolen more than one hatchet. So he has the means to do this regarding the dog.
Yeah.
And it's a very strange thing to do for anyone to do an act like that. But
horrible act.
If he did in fact have a hatchet, was he stealing it for more than one reason? It looks like he had the means to kill the dog.
The other problem too with the break-ins is you report that hatchet, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what if you have a legal weapon? Normally, when somebody breaks into your house and let's say you had a shotgun that wasn't registered to you,
mm-hmm.
and somebody steals it, you normally don't report that to the cops.
Right. So
that's the other issue too. Then you go, okay, well, he has these hatchets. Well, that kind of puts him in the more likely that maybe he killed this dog scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And then, well, how did he get the guns? Well, right. If he's breaking into houses and stealing guns, And I'd wonder if any of those individuals would come forward and say, well, I actually did have a shotgun, or I did have a 22.
And that, yeah. And that's why I question the statement that he did not have access to firearms. When you're busting into people's homes and taking things, you have access to a lot of things that you normally don't have access to. The big question for me on those other burglary charges, I would love to know how he gained access into those homes, right? Because here's the thing. We can say all day long that he would not have broken into his own home, that he would not have busted open this door and went in there.
Mm-hmm.
We can't say that if that is exactly how he was gaining access into these other homes. My suspicion, Captain, is that he was not breaking into these homes. And the reason why I say that is when I look at the charges, he's charged with first and second degree burglary, but charged with criminal trespassing, meaning that he was in an area that he shouldn't be for reasons that were no good.
Right.
But you would expect to see a breaking and entering charge with James,
which
we do not see. So I'm wondering, with this being a rural area, is this just a simple situation of people leaving their doors unlocked? He knows nobody's home and he lives in the woods. He can creep up on your house whenever he feels like it, check the doors, and walk around your home and collect items that he believes he needs for whatever survival game he's playing in the woods.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And also, too, I mean, look, if anybody knows the credit card trick, depending on where your door latches, like, you can take a credit card or a butter knife or anything and just pop that door open. And maybe that's what he's doing. And then you wouldn't know if the door was locked or unlocked anyways.
Right.
So he obviously knows this little trick. And also, you know, once this trick became more popular, they started making sure that all the locks kind of go one way.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting. It's definitely interesting. And so if they're not reporting that he broke in, then, again, what else did he take that they're not reporting?
The other thing, too, is when he's picked up, when they find him, there's no report of them saying, oh, we found a bloody hatchet with the guy.
Right.
You know, there was not what I would call any damning evidence against him other than he's misunderstood. We don't really know what kind of lifestyle he's living or what state of mind he is in at the time of that his sister is killed.
Yeah, and I would say that with his mental state, he has to be a suspect. Mm-hmm. The one thing I can't get over is, then how did this individual have three guns, and then when they decided to, you know, murder their sister, they decided to use three different guns on this individual? And there is some speculation that some of the gunshot wounds happen at the same time.
Yes, there is speculation of that. It would be possible for one person to use two or three guns on the same victim. The reason why, Captain, I can't rule him out is, I got to paint a picture for you. Okay, we have a man that is in need of some help, in need of some support. He's living in the woods. We do not know what's going through his mind. If I try to put myself in his situation, we know that he doesn't believe that his mother is his mother. Can you imagine where you're waking up every day in the woods, you're sleeping in the dark forest every night, and you're waking up every day going, you know what, there's this house that's not too far from here, and it's full of these people that I've never met, that I don't know who they are, and they keep telling me that they're my family, that this is my mother, my sister, my brothers. I could see somebody panicking and doing something very strange in that situation. It's almost like being, you know, he's had a breakup with reality and he's thrown into a world that he cannot understand.
Right.
Therefore, I don't know that we can understand or put limits on what we think he is capable of or what he's not capable of.
Right. So you're basically stating that your opinion is that the family's like, he's not a violent individual, so therefore, he couldn't have done this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, close case on him. Let's throw a little other theory out there. I'm not saying I believe in this, but just go with me on this, right?
Okay.
So this person that is not capable, this person that is not violent, has a mental break with reality, and you normally would see certain types of breaks of reality with the same individual. right? Like somebody that you're caring for, somebody that is in your family that has mental illness, right? They have a normal set. The way they break with that reality is normally the same. But what if this time was different, right? Mm-hmm. And then the family comes. We got an hour window from the time that they supposedly see the body and call the cops. Mm-hmm. What takes place in that hour? And then on top of that, remember how all this evidence that the police didn't collect, that they then collected and then gave to, was this created even after they left? You see what I'm saying?
Right.
Like it starts creating some answers for some of these things that these questions arise. And so your thought would be, okay, what if you knew that he murdered her? And then now you have two options. Your daughter's already dead. And what is going to happen to him? What is going to happen to your mentally ill son? And what's an easy way to cover this up? If she is shot by multiple guns, then they're going to assume that she was killed by multiple people. And guess what? He doesn't have multiple people in his life or multiple friends. So, look, it's not a theory I believe in. I'm just saying it does answer some of the weird questions that we do have.
Yeah. I thought I was steering the ship in a unpopular direction by saying I would still consider him a suspect. And, man, you drove it right into the iceberg there.
This is not what I believe.
Saying not only could he be still a suspect, but the possibility of the family covering his tracks for him. Very interesting stuff. And there's a lot more. There's a lot more strange twists and turns and icebergs along the way in this case.
Yeah, and let's just be clear. That is not what I think. I'm just putting out the possibilities. And I think when you're trying to get to the answers, right? When you're trying to funnel everything down to get to the answers, you have to look at every possible thing and where does the evidence point, you know, you. So I think that's all I'm doing. And I think people should exercise that right and exercise themselves in doing that more often with these cases, you know, to funnel into the truth.
No, you're exactly right, because this is a case that requires everyone to put on their thinking cap, and you need a really big, tall thinking cap for this case, because there's so many possibilities and so many just weird stuff.
Yeah, it's going to get pretty heated.
I can't really explain it any more than weird stuff.
All right.
So for more weird stuff, we'll be back in the garage tomorrow.
And hopefully there's no wood chipper. All right, thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow back in the garage.
Until then, be good, be kind, and don't litter.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.